Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tetragon Financial Group Limited Investor Conference Call. All lines will be in a listen-only mode throughout the whole conference. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, simply press star, then zero on your telephone. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded today. I would now like to hand over to the chairperson today, Mr. David Wyshner. Please begin your meeting, sir, and I'll be standing by.
Thanks, Sophia. As one of the principals of the investment manager of Tetragon Financial Group Limited, I'd like to welcome you to our investor call, which will focus on Q1 2012 results and provide an update on business progress to date. The format of today's call will be similar to prior calls. Phil Bland, our CFO, will present Tetragon's Q1 and full year results. I will provide an overview on our investment portfolio, key performance metrics, and asset management businesses. And Mike Rosenberg will provide a CLO market update. To aid our investors, we will address questions we have received in the applicable portions of this call rather than solely at the end. I'd like to remind everyone that the following contains forward-looking comments, including statements regarding the intentions, beliefs, or current expectations concerning performance and financial conditions on the products and markets in which Tetragon invests. Our performance may change materially as a result of various possible events or factors. Let me now turn the call over to Phil.
Thanks very much, David, and welcome to the call. So as you've seen, we published TFG's Q1 2012 report last week. This quarter actually marks the start of the fifth year since the IPO of TFG, during which time the firm has successfully weathered the worst financial crisis in living memory and, we believe, emerged strongly ready for its next stage of evolution. Overall, the Q1 numbers reflected another strong quarter of results, although, as anticipated when we spoke to you about the 2011 annual report, the pace of growth has slowed compared to the dramatic recovery period of 2011. I'll now briefly go through the Q1 results, focusing on what we consider to be three of the key financial metrics for TFG's overall business: earnings per share, NAV per share, and distributions. So firstly, let's look at earnings per share. During the first quarter, the company generated 46 cents of EPS, which was down on the Q4 2011 number of 69 cents, but is still comfortably above the pre-financial crisis levels. Although the CLO portfolio continued to be the main driver of earnings, some of the conditions which had driven prior CLO performance began to return to more historical levels, and this reduced its contribution to bottom line earnings. I don't plan to go into too much detail on the portfolio metrics here, as they're going to be covered by David later in the call. But in line with our comments at year end, there continued to be a clear distinction between the performance of the US and European deals, with the US portfolio IRR edging up to 19.7% on a weighted average basis, which was naturally positive for earnings, while the European deals underperformed and produced a slight drag on performance. Of course, it's worth noting again that the European portfolio remains less than 10% of corporate loan-based investments. Looking at the rest of the investment assets, interest income and gains from direct loans increased the contribution in absolute and relative terms during the quarter. On the asset side, asset management side of our business, management fee income from LCM also increased in absolute terms, as well as a percentage of gross earnings. Reflecting the increase in LCM's loans under management to over $3.7 billion, management fee income in Q1 grew by approximately 16% compared to the same period last year. With the CLO market currently perceived to be conducive to new deals, we expect that LCM will continue to grow assets through the rest of 2012. On the cost side of the statement of operations, overall expenses, including management and incentive fees, reduced in both absolute terms and as a percentage of income. Turning now to our second important metric, TFG's NAV per share increased 3.4% to a new high of $13.12. As expected, this was primarily as a result of the earnings for the period, but also net share purchases under our buyback program contributed between 5 and 6 cents of NAV per share accretion. As a point of reference, NAV per share now is 128% higher than 3 years earlier at the end of Q1 2009, which is in the depths of the financial crisis. And during the same period, the share price has risen by over 600%. Finally, our third metric that I'd like to cover is distributions, starting with dividends. The board continues to believe that the dividend is an important consideration for investors. Maintaining a progressive pattern of dividends, supported by sustainable earnings over the long term, remains an important consideration for the board, who approved a dividend of 10.5 cents per share with respect to Q1 2012. When viewed on a rolling 12-month basis, the dividend has grown year on year by 20.6%. In addition to the dividend, we continued the share buyback program, through which we returned over $9 million, or approximately 8 cents per share during the first quarter, and the buyback program continues to operate. We've had a number of questions on the treatment of the repurchased shares under the program, which we have addressed on previous calls, but of course I'll happily touch on them again here. The repurchased shares have really three main characteristics. Firstly, they're no longer eligible for any dividends. Secondly, they're excluded from NAV per share and EPS calculations. And thirdly, they're not actually cancelled. So they could be introduced or reintroduced in the future. But investors will be able to see in our financial highlights table on page 17 of the latest quarterly reports, the number of shares outstanding that we use for EPS, DPS, and NAV per share purposes. And we report those consistently in that section of the report. Periodically, really as part of corporate housekeeping, some of the repurchased shares have been moved to a subsidiary in order to free up capacity in the company's treasury share account. The shares held by TFG subsidiary are treated the same as shares held in the company's treasury share account from an accounting perspective, and therefore share the same characteristics. So no dividend, and they're excluded from EPS and NAV per share calculations. We hope this covers adequately the questions on the topic, but I'd also suggest that you can reference note 6 in the latest set of audited financial statements for 2011 for more information. We'd encourage investors to review the program over the long term rather than focus on weekly announcements, which may be impacted by a variety of factors to do with the market. In addition, you can also view a full graphical history of the buyback on page 6 of the latest quarterly report, which sets out the number of shares purchased as well as the average price. So having reviewed TFG's overall business in terms of our three operating metrics, and also covered hopefully the questions on the buyback, I'll now pass back to David for a more in-depth look at TFG's investment portfolio and asset management business segments.
Thanks, Phil. Let me now quickly run you through the investment portfolio and some key performance metrics, as well as TFG's asset management businesses. During Q1 2012, we continued to be active in the primary or new issue CLO market, investing $42.3 million in two new CLO equity positions, including a $19.4 million majority position in the equity tranche of a new issue CLO managed by LCM. This is called LCM 10. During Q1, we also sold a small U.S. CLO equity position totaling approximately $0.2 million at a price which generated a 50% realized IRR. With the additional investments made during Q1, the CLO equity portfolio increased to 78 transactions, up from 77 as of the end of Q4, while the number of external CLO managers remained unchanged at 27. TFG also increased its holding of real estate assets managed by Green Oak. Through Q1, TFG has funded approximately $7.5 million of equity in commercial real estate assets across Japan, U.S., and Europe, and have commitments to make further investments during the rest of 2012. As of the end of Q1, the estimated total fair value of TFG's CLO investment portfolio was approximately $1.16 billion, consisting of $1.04 billion of U.S. investments and $116.2 million of European exposure. On a look-through basis, this represents exposure to leveraged loans through our CLO investments of approximately $18.8 billion par value spread over approximately 1,610 corporate obligors, the substantial majority of which are U.S. names, with the balance being European issuers. Additionally, as of Q1, TFG's direct holdings of liquid U.S. bank loans stood at an aggregate par amount of approximately $122.2 million and total fair value of approximately $120.3 million. The portfolio is presently comprised of approximately 40 distinct issuers. The underlying business performed well during Q1, with the loan portfolio trading up to approximately 99% of par from an average price of 96% of par at year-end. No defaults were registered during the period, and the average coupon is approximately LIBOR plus 350 basis points. For the quarter, there were net realized gains, interest income, and discount premium totaling $1.5 million. We will continue to opportunistically and selectively deploy capital into direct loans when appropriate and leverage the expertise of the LCM team. We particularly like the liquid nature of these investments, the potential for OID and amend and extend optionality, as well as the overall return profile when coupled with our in-house expertise. With respect to the CLO and loan portfolio composition, approximately 77% of risk capital is invested in U.S. broadly syndicated loans, 9% in European loans, and 14% in U.S. middle market loans. In regards to hedging, there were no material changes in TFG's hedging approach. At present, we have no direct credit hedges in place, but employ certain FX and tail risk rate hedges, which seek to mitigate both Euro FX exposure and potential spike in inflation and or nominal interest rates. We review our hedging strategy on an ongoing basis as we seek to mitigate identified risks. Let me now update you on some key performance metrics that we remain focused on in our CLOs. TFG's lagging 12-month corporate loan default rate, which includes both European and U.S. CLO investments, actually increased to 0.8% annualized at the end of Q1 from 0.4% annualized at year-end. This is primarily due to increased defaults experienced in the European CLOs. The default breakdown by geography showed TFG's U.S. CLO equity investments registering 0.5% annualized default rate, while European CLO equity investments had a 2.3% annualized default rate. At the end of Q1, 97% of TFG's CLO investments were passing their most junior OC tests, weighted by fair value. When measured on a percentage of transaction basis, 64 deals, or 93% of the company's CLO investments, were passing their most junior OC test, unchanged from year-end. TFG's U.S. CLOs, representing over 90% of overall fair value, continue to perform well, with 100% by both fair value and number of transactions passing their most junior OC tests. In comparison, the market-wide average of U.S. CLOs estimated to be passing their most junior OC test at quarter end was approximately 96%. At the end of Q1, the weighted average percentage of corporate obligors rated triple C fell to 6.2% versus 7% at year end. For TFG's U.S. CLO equity investments, the weighted average percentage of triple C assets was 4.8%, while our European CLOs experienced 11.1%. Also of note, TFG's WARF, or weighted average rating factor, moved lower to 2,588 versus 2,624 at the end of Q4. Now let me turn to our asset management businesses. As we've stated previously, we feel that TFG owning stakes in asset management business may provide repeatable, diversified, fee-based revenue streams while reducing fees paid to third-party managers. Over time, we feel this strategy may help the company develop into a more diversified financial services firm. We believe that doing so will strengthen TFG's income streams and create long-term value for TFG shareholders. In regards to LCM, TFG's loan management business, we continue to perform well during Q1, with all of LCM K cash flow CLOs, as set out in the public reports, still within their reinvestment periods, continuing to pay both senior and subordinate management fees. LCM grew AUM by nearly 10.5% versus year-end, with Q1 assets under management totaling $3.7 billion. Looking forward, we expect to continue to grow LCM business via primary CLO issuance, managed accounts, and CLO manager consolidations, as well as other strategic opportunities. In regards to real estate, Green Oak had a dramatic growth in its real estate investment management and advisory business across North America, Europe, and Asia in the quarter. By the end of Q1, assets under management stood at approximately $1.7 billion. Green Oak has recently had closings on its U.S. and Japanese funds and has won an investment mandate over a significant portfolio of European real estate-related securities. Let me now hand it over to Mike to provide some color on the present loan and CLO market conditions.
Thanks, Dave. The current state of the CLO market paints a very different picture depending on what region you are looking at. The U.S. CLO market, which is represented by over 90% of Tetragon's CLO investment portfolio, has rebounded nicely and is on an upward-sloping trajectory with respect to new issuance volumes, supported by what we believe are attractive underlying loan fundamentals, attractive loan spreads vis-a-vis historical levels, new investors entering the CLO market, an active secondary CLO market, and continued strong performance across the capital structure. New issuance volumes for 2012 are projected to be approximately $25 billion, which is roughly double last year's volume of $13 billion. Default rates have remained low, coupled with a generally benign default outlook for the near future. Loan spreads have remained wide in comparison to historical levels, due in part, in our view, to the changing landscape of the buyer base of leveraged loans. During the mid-2000s, CLOs represented over 60% of the buying base for bank loans. Today, CLOs represent only 39%, according to Wells Fargo Research. Filling the void has been increased buying from hedge funds and high-yield bond funds, which represent close to 30% of the market versus only 10 to 15% during the mid-2000 period. The effect of this has been significant, as the increased demand from total return-oriented investors has led in part to increased price volatility in the loan market. Unlike the old days of mostly buy-and-hold loan investors, the added volatility may be beneficial to CLOs who have matched long-term cash flow-based financing. The ability of CLO managers to purchase discounted-priced assets in which to build par values within their CLOs has often led to strong deal performance and ultimately increased CLO equity returns. Now, in contrast, the European CLO market, which is approximately 10% of Tetragon's CLO equity portfolio, is generally marked by uncertainty with respect to the underlying fundamentals of European corporate credit, a lack of liquidity in European CLO secondary trading, worse than projected performance of European CLOs, zero new issuance volumes for arbitrage European CLOs, and a very bleak outlook for any new issuance going forward. Generally speaking, we believe European CLOs have suffered due to the lack of supply of quality European leveraged bank loans, which led European CLO managers to accumulate portfolios with much less diversification compared to U.S. deals, higher concentrations of individual credits, and the inclusion of a higher percentage of non-first lien senior secured credits, primarily European mezzanine debt and second lien loans. The combination of larger position sizes and a higher percentage of non-first lien loans proved to be very detrimental to the performance of these transactions. Now I'd like to turn to some of the questions that we've received from investors in advance of the call that we have not already addressed. First relates to transparency. To begin, we received a question on the company's investor reporting program and investor communications. As always, we are grateful for the feedback we receive on such matters. For those of you that have followed the company for some time, you will have noticed the continued evolution of the company's already fulsome public reports. We have, over the years, significantly expanded the information provided on the company's underlying assets and have also sought to present the information in a clear and user-friendly manner. Similarly, we maintain and update the company's website at www.tetragoninv.com, which we hope investors, especially those new to the company, may find helpful as it covers many of the historical matters that may not be covered on a routine basis. Although mindful of regulatory requirements and commercial considerations of the market, we continue to explore ways to enhance our public reporting in the company's website. Continuing on investor and market communication generally, we are also pleased to report that the company has retained Singer Capital Markets as its corporate broker, which we hope will further improve the company's shareholder outreach efforts. Of course, we continue to seek to expand analyst coverage of the company and participate in industry conferences to tell the company's story. Finally, we continue to strive to make ourselves available outside of these update calls to answer questions and hear shareholder suggestions. Next topic is discount to book value. We were also asked to comment on the current TFG share price discount to NAV. Although we generally seek to avoid comment on the price movements of TFG shares, we certainly do understand the interest in this matter. We don't believe that there is a single reason for the current discount, but rather potentially several contributing factors. To start, TFG may not be a very well understood company given its particular characteristics. It is a U.S. dollar denominated, Euronext Amsterdam listed, Guernsey domiciled company whose current majority of underlying assets are CLO equity investments. These particular characteristics, we believe, may not lend the company to widespread analyst coverage, while interest in the company tends to come from more specialized investor groups. Furthermore, because it is so different from other companies, it does not have ready peers for investor comparisons, which further complicates the understanding of the company. We believe that many of the efforts the company has undertaken may help alleviate some of these contributing factors. First, the TFG buyback program discussed earlier may at appropriate price levels below NAV represent an attractive use of TFG's excess cash. We have sought to improve the liquidity of and interest in the shares through increased analyst coverage, appointment of a corporate broker, and non-deal roadshows and investor conferences. We also hope that expanded information in the company's public reports may further investor education. As stated earlier, we continue to seek to grow and expand the company's asset management platform as we build on the efforts to transition the company to a broadly diversified financial services firm that benefits from diverse income streams. We believe that such efforts will lead to increased shareholder value and could ultimately, over the long term, with everything else being equal, result in share price trading at a premium to NAV. A key aspect of our approach is to increase shareholder value through share price appreciation and capital distributions, including dividends. We believe that if we continue to build a robust and underlying successful business, it should ultimately be recognized in the share price. Next question had to do with optional stock dividends. We also received the question on why the company continues to maintain an optional stock dividend program. The optional stock dividend program was established shortly after the company went public on the recommendation of investors and analysts. We understand that certain investors may desire such a program for their specific tax and investment reasons and believe that providing all shareholders with this option is a worthwhile endeavor. Each shareholder can decide whether to participate. Accordingly, the extent of the stock issued in relation to an announced dividend and determined reference price is based on shareholder preference and varies. Lastly, question related to SEC registration. We've received some questions on recent regulatory developments in the U.S. regarding investment advisor registration with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. We can report that the investment manager is now registered as an investment advisor under the U.S. Investor Advisors Act of 1940. That concludes the Q&A portion of the call. We'd like to thank everyone for joining. As always, please do not hesitate to contact us with any further questions. We look forward to speaking with you in the future. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation today. This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.